You are listening to the weekly message from Mount Helena Community Church. Celebration services are every Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Gateway Center. Or join us live online at www.mounthelena.cc.
We had quite an adventure in South Africa, end of March, right into dang near the end of April. I think we had representation from this church for about 4 weeks in South Africa, and there was some coming and going, and a lot of adventures to be had. You're only going to hear a little bit because, you know, we got a lot of people that were there and a lot of stories, so we don't get to touch on everything, but it was a great adventure, and I want to just tell you initially, I went to South Africa a week ahead of the team from the church that went. And the reason I went there was I had been invited to a leader's retreat, if you will, where we sat and listened to the teaching of Ray Lowe for about a week. Many of you know Ray. Ray will be here again in August, so we're looking forward to being able to hear from him again. But Ray took some of the younger leaders from around the globe. I spent time with guys from Zimbabwe, England, South Africa. There was a fairly significant representation from the United States there. Our friends down in Missoula at Clark Fork, they had some leaders there. Also our church in Spokane, they had leaders there. And so it was just a time where there was a lot of camaraderie. If you could throw up that first slide, Jason. I have so many stories from my time with those guys that I can't tell them all, and you've heard a little bit about them in some of my messages, but probably one of the most significant things for me while I was over there getting this leadership education from these guys was some of the friendships I established, and one of them was with a young man named Abdullah Jamal, and we just called him AJ because that's a mouthful for us Americans to say. He was born in India, and he was born into a Muslim family, and God got a hold of him about 5 years ago, and he gave his life to Christ, and you know, for a while his family disowned him, and you know, there's stories like that happening on the planet right now that you and I don't necessarily have an understanding of what it really means to be persecuted for our faith, what it means to leave our family, for our family to disown us. It's very difficult thing. And it was one of the most impactful things for me was hearing the stories of people that live under tougher circumstances than us, and yet they're stepping forward to lead God's people on the earth. And so that was probably one of the most significant things for me. We stayed on Steve Oliver's farm. Steve is the leader of Regions Beyond, which is the network of churches that we belong to. And there's some nice photos there. We had some teams and competitions. We had people of all ages from all different places, and we had a ton of fun, but God also really impacted us. And so I spent a week there on that farm with those guys, and following that, the week after, I met up with the team in Clarens, South Africa, which is just a little bit northeast of central South Africa. You can go ahead and go to that next slide. The Master Builders Conference is what it's called. And Clarens, South Africa, is where Regions Beyond was birthed, basically. It's where the network we belong to originated. And it was Steve and that church you see in the lower left corner. That's a church building. And that's where things got started. And now there's a worldwide network there. You see that photo in the top center with me and a guy named Paul. Paul has been probably one of the most significant connections we've made because he oversees about 20 churches in South Africa, 10 of which he's planted, and he's desperate for leaders, and he's desperate for resources, and he's kicking butt and taking names. So it was really good to spend some time with Paul, and I've got to do that last year as well, and so that was good. But I could talk on, and you could hear a lot about my stories and my experiences at the Master Builders Conference, but you get to hear from me all the time. So I'm going to turn it over to this team. Candace Marshall is going to go first. She's going to share some stuff with you about the conference. Hey, these guys are nervous. Everybody smile at these guys. Yeah, it gets a little nerve-wracking to talk in front of people. I said, you got nothing to worry about. They all love you. So you all love them, right? Yeah, so nothing to be nervous about, but they're going to share some stories with you. So I'm going to turn it over to Candace. It's all yours.
Hello. Okay, it's working. I'll get down here like JR. So I'm a mom of four, and going on this trip was a big deal. My husband actually sent me. He said, you need to go on this trip. And I said, great, I'm excited. But before I left, I told him, I am so sick of myself. If God doesn't do something, I'm not coming home until he does. And God did some stuff. The next slide, Jason, that'd be great. So here we are at the conference. And during the conference, a gentleman by the name of Payman came up to me and he said, I have a word for you that God gave me. And I said, great. Now, Payman, he's in the bottom picture. You can't see it very good with all of us together. He's from Iran. He's standing next to, between Jeremy and JR. And when he was younger, he wanted to be a suicide bomber because he was a Muslim. But God had different plans for him, obviously. And he is now a missionary in South Africa along with his wife and three children. So Payman came up to me and he said, grab somebody. So I grabbed Chrissy. Chrissy was my roommate during the trip, and the night before, we had a heart-to-heart about some serious issues, and I spilled out my guts to her. And so then Payman comes up to me, and he says, I have some words for you. And he laid his hand on me, and he started praying. And the moment he started speaking, there was this breaking that I could feel coming over me. And he spoke some very hard things to hear. But like I said, I was so sick of myself, I wanted to hear what he had to say. And what he said words like, self-pity, isolation, you feel like you're trash. And those kinds of words, that truth that he said just broke chains over me. But he also spoke words like, this is a new season, you are a gift, you are a blessing. And those things pertain to what I talked to Chrissy about. And then later that night, he's like, I want you to tell me what that all means. And so we got together as a group, and I bawled my head off explaining to him what that all meant in depth and to the rest of the group. That's where that picture comes from. So these guys know some very dirty secrets about me. And then he also ended up speaking words over our team, which was very encouraging for all of us. And so the next day, I feel very lighthearted in many ways, but there's still a sense of burden. And I go up for prayer at the end. It was right before lunch, and we're praying, and everybody's leaving, and this woman's just holding my hand during this praying time, and I open my eyes, and she looks at me, and she wraps her arms around me. It's Donna, who's in the picture at the left with me. She wraps her arms around me, or right, I guess, and she gives me this hug, and it is the best hug I have ever had in my entire life. I am not kidding you. It was so loving and gentle and kind, and then I cried, and when I say I cried like an idiot, okay? Like, I bawled my head off. And for 40 minutes, I cried in her arms, and we talked, and she prayed for me. And during one of those moments, I said, I feel like I'm your daughter. And then after I said it, I'm like, what a stupid thing to say. Why would you ever say that to somebody? And she goes, you know what? When I saw you, I felt like the Lord told me that you needed a mother's hug. And that's what that obviously was very powerful to me. And then she also said, I don't have any biological children, and I have two African boys I've semi-adopted. They're men, actually. And she goes, but I've been praying for Donna, daughters. And so now I call her Mama Donna, and we meet, or we don't meet, we email each other. And when she gets back from Burundi, that's where she's a missionary at, we're going to be talking, and she's hoping to come here. But this woman gives her life, or risks her life literally for Christ. So she's in Burundi right now. It is one of the most five dangerous countries in the world. And on Easter Sunday, this congregation raised $2,500 to support her and the work that she does. And so I just want to say thank you for being a part of that and expanding the gospel. And I'm going to pass it on to Owen. He was our fearless leader. Here he is.
Thanks, Candace. I'm going to do the same thing and come down here just a bit. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the trip and just how we went about doing some of the things, a little bit logistical, but some of the things that happened to me. This is the fifth time that I've been to South Africa. My wife Becky and I go there basically when we can afford to go. So anyway, the pictures here just show a little bit of some of the things that we saw. We landed in Johannesburg. From Johannesburg, we drove to Clarence. The Clarence Conference was, to me, significant also, just I think as much to a lot of the other people on our team. When we were there, first day, we're in a kind of a different building. Everything in Africa is different than it is here. Clarens reminds me a lot of Big Fork, Montana, but Africa. So if you can kind of get that, it's sort of artsy, but not. Not that Big Fork isn't. But anyway, we're there, and I'm thinking, okay, we're at a conference. I was really proud to be asked to go to the conference and really excited about that, but kind of didn't want to go there and spend my time in a chair when I could be fixing stuff, because that's kind of what I go for. So the first day we're there, and I'm thinking about fixing roofs and how we're going to get enough screws and all these different little logistical things while everybody else is worshiping and doing this stuff. And I'm thinking, man, these guys really get after the worship. And the speakers were really good. They had great messages. And so I kind of got into the flow of it a bit, and I realized that, obviously, I thought they were kind of weird. And of course, I was the one who was in reality. So once I kind of got into the flow of it a bit, so there we are, and we're worshiping and singing, and every other song is in English. The other side of it is in Afrikaans. So we were trying to sing Afrikaans, and I was standing by Ryan at one point, and it was pretty funny. But it went. We did fine. But by the third day, the end of the conference last night, so the worship music is playing, and they've got great musicians, fantastic voices, people singing. And all of us are up in the mosh pit dancing with everybody else. And so there's about 10 or 15 of us Caucasians. And otherwise, it's a pretty pepper crowd. But we were having a great time. And I think about talked about David dancing till his clothes fell off. And you probably remember that part and how his wife was mad. My clothes didn't fall off, but there was a lady right beside me blowing a whistle, and I couldn't hear out of my ear for about a week, so I thought maybe I did my part. But anyway, so we went from Clarens, and from Clarens we went on down, and we traveled to the Transkei. And the Transkei is an area, it's called Transkei because trans means across, and it's the Kei River. So we're now on the poorest part of South Africa, and while there, of course, we went there to work and fix roofs and do all the work we could in the amount of time we had. And I had a great crew of guys. Ryan was amazing being able to do electrical work and all the different things that we needed to do. Jeremy ran crews several days for us on roofing projects. So we got a lot of work done. I had asked ahead of time that we would have three local people that could be able to help us do just the labor. We had to tear off roofs, metal roofs, put new roofs on, you know, repair rafters, those kinds of things. We had seven instead of three. They were just anxious to help, which was amazing. And so we're working, and I can see that we're going to be ahead of schedule. So I thought, well, we're ahead of schedule. One of the things I really wanted to do on this trip was not only get this work done, but I wanted to have a relationship with some of these guys. And six of the seven of them could speak English, and some of it was pretty tough. One guy couldn't at all. His name was Luandiso. And it was funny, you'd ask Luandiso to go get a tool or something, and he would say, sure. And then he would stand there, or he would say, okay. Or anyway, it didn't work, so we had to figure that out. But we had the seven guys and then the three of us, and one of the things we wanted to do was make sure that they knew we were there as brothers in Christ with them. Africa is a way different place culturally. There's blacks, coloreds, and whites, and they do not mix. It's not a racist thing. It's not a bad thing. They just don't mix. And so the guys we had were all black guys, and they were very nice men, and they ranged in age quite a lot. But so the first day we were there, I said, we're going to take food and drinks. So we gave them food and drinks, and they all went away from us and sat down to eat. So I got our guys, and we got up, and we walked over to them, and we sat down with them. And then we were able to have a little conversation. Well, by the third day, we were all getting along great and having fun and kind of joking a little bit. But I could see we were going to be ahead of schedule. So I said, well, let's go to Port St. John's. Port St. John's is an old-time port from back in the mid-1800s when the British used to land there. And I think it was part of like the Ivory Coast and some of that. But anyway, so we go to Port St. John's, and we've got a van, and there's 10 of us in the van. We go to the beach at Port St. John's, and it's a beautiful beach. And you can see the light bulb with the yellow shorts on down in the lower left. That's me. There's three of us that look somewhat like this and about 70 that look like the guys beyond. So when the lifeguard was looking out in the water, they could see us pretty easily. Anyway, we had a great time with these guys. I think some of them had probably never even been there, and it's only about 35 miles from the town where we were working. We drove there, and we stopped and bought Cokes for everybody, and we had a really good time because we spent some time with these guys not just working. And that was one of my real goals this trip, was to do that. So anyway, that was kind of the Port St. John's part. And so then we went back, and we just simply went back to work. And so that's kind of the part I just want to let you know about, is just we did numerous different things on this trip. And it was able to work so people could come and go as portions of the trip worked for them, scheduling what their interests were, whatever that might be. And I told JR I was going to do this, but I'm going to throw an ad out because we're going to go again next year. This was an awesome trip. So I'm going to hand it over, and we'll just move along, and Jeremy's going to pick it up from here. Thanks.
So I'm Jeremy, and this is my second trip to South Africa. I went with Clark Fork City Church a year ago, and that was really fun. So I was glad to go again. And we had the ability to, when we got down there, their church roof was leaking on them. And so they asked, can you fix our church roof too? And we're like, well, we're ahead of schedule, like Owen said. So we said, yeah. So we went there, and the roofs are metal roofs, but leaves fall on the roofs, and pool water and rust right through in a couple of years. So this roof was only about 10 years old, but it was already rusting through. Picture is up there in the bottom right. You can see holes already in the roof. So we swept off the roof and then got to cut down some branches, which was kind of fun. You don't get to do that with OSHA here in the States, climb trees and cut branches off trees. So that was pretty fun. And it was really good just working with the guys back and forth. And that was one of those days. A couple days before that, I didn't drink enough water and got really tired and hot, and so wasn't a fun day on some of the other roofs, but that roof was really fun, getting up there and just going, and me and Ryan were on that day, and Owen was working on another roof. We split into two teams, so it was really good. And then another thing, we had a rain day where one day I kind of got rained out a little bit, so we got to do some electrical work, like Owen was saying, Ryan, we rewired half the house because it was all on one circuit. Just didn't work very well. And then if you go to the next slide, please. No. Is that it? Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. We got to do some gravel work. I think it's in the first slide, sorry. If you go back. Yeah, right there in the middle, we got to put gravel on their driveway. It was just a dirt driveway, and we were spitting out, trying to get up and down a lot with our van. So one of the last days, we got to put gravel down. And then if you go to the next slide, we then went to a ranch after we finished at Bombasana and got to replace a hallway floor, too, and do some electrical work. So, okay. So I was eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and this is a pet pig. It's a pet warthog called Bacon. And they don't shoot it at the ranch. It stays around. It's tame. And he seemed like I was hungry, so I offered him half of my sandwich. And apparently peanut butter sticks really well to the roof of his mouth for a long time. But it was really funny. He spun in circles, and Tammy got a video. So I'm going to hand it over to Ryan Moore.
So like Jeremy was saying, on these this roof we were working on, the next slide, guys. So the guy here on the right-hand side, we call him No Shoes because I don't remember his name. Couldn't pronounce much of anybody's names over there. The top center picture is him on the roof. That day that it was hot. I'm a bearded white boy. I don't do well in Africa. I sweated a lot, and it was so hot, the tools that were sitting up on the roof, you could hardly pick them up, you know, and this guy's up there with no shoes on. It just so happened that that day we had taken a bunch of clothes and some shoes and stuff to give out. We drove this guy down to the van, and just happened that this pair of shoes we brought was perfect size for him. He was incredibly happy and grateful. He just he kept saying, you know, thank you very much. They were, you know, they were the perfect size, and they were real tough, he said. They last a long time. So it was incredibly rewarding to be able to have the opportunity to give those to him. Yeah, it's just, when JR asked me to go on this, I was incredibly nervous. My business is a 24/7 kind of job. I'm on call all the time. I didn't know how my business would really survive with me being gone for 3 weeks. So, JR said, just give it to God and believe, you know. I did, and that's one thing I want to emphasize to all of you guys, is if I can go, you can all go, you know. I'm sure you all have similar careers and stuff, but I would do this again in a second. Even if I lost 20 grand being gone, you know, it was incredibly rewarding. Yeah, just when God says do it, just do it. We can come up with excuses all day long why we shouldn't go. You know, why we, I don't know, just it was very, very rewarding to go. So I just would really highly encourage anybody that's on your heart to do it. Please go next year. Here's Chrissy.
Me again. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the next slide. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the women did while we were in Bambisana. There are, I can't even remember how many soup clubs, Owen. 17 soup clubs in the area. And what we did is we went to these different soup clubs, not all of them, only a few of them, and we helped feed the kids. We gave them bubbles, which they loved. We read them stories. We did all different kinds of things. We also handed out clothes. That's Mama Christina in the left-hand side. She was so excited. She was waving the bag around. She was dancing and everything when we were giving her these clothes, and she immediately went through them and started handing them out to the kids, first to the orphans that she knew that were orphans, and then to whoever else needed them. And in the middle picture there, the metal building was one of the soup clubs. And then there's lots of organizations that help out with these soup clubs. They were able to build that building in the background there. But you can just see we're all there together, kids eating. That picture with the kids, most of them do not have shoes. Like in that picture, none of them are wearing any shoes. But they're all very grateful for the food. That's usually their only meal they get that day. And most of these some of the soup clubs run 7 days a week, some run 5 days a week. So sometimes they go on the weekend without any food at all. So these soup clubs are a big deal in these communities. And these mamas are some older women, and they take care of these kids, and they invite them there. And if you go to the next slide, some of them have preschools in them. And that round building in the middle, that's Mama Christina's preschool. Well, her daughter actually runs that preschool. And then the slide below it is inside there. You probably can't tell very good, but the bookshelves are really worn, and it's very dirty inside, but it's what they have. And Mama Christina's daughter, and I can't remember her name, but she wanted toys for the kids, like pots and pans and little stove set. Well, she didn't have anything like that and didn't have money for it, so she paper macheted a whole bunch of stuff, pots, dishes, a little stove set even. It was just incredible that she did that. But what else? They have gardens. Some of them have gardens. You'll see a couple of the mamas working in the gardens there. We also did an Easter egg hunt for the kids. So you want that one little boy, he's carrying 3 Easter eggs, and we filled them with candy or necklaces. Some of them, when they put the candy in their mouth, they kept the wrappers on because they never had candy before. They didn't know about it. There's this one little boy who had a sucker, and I mean, it lasted forever. Everybody else's is gone, and he's just sitting there licking it, and his eyes are like this big because he just totally loved it. So that was pretty cool to see. And then in the next slide, one of the cool things we women were able to do is be part of this mama's meeting. They all gather together once a month and have a meeting. They share a meal together. They talk about logistics. The guy in the bottom right-hand corner, that's Poomsie. He's just going over logistical things. And then Becky was able to share with them, and she told them just how much it means to, how much they mean to the children, and how encouraged we are over here in America by people like women like them that dedicate their lives to these kids. And they said to us after Becky had said that, Mama Christina said, well, how long did it take you guys to get here? And we said, well, it was a 27-hour flight. And they're all just like, whoa, because that just blows their mind, that kind of travel. And then Mama Christina said, knowing that there's people in America that are willing to come over here and spend the time and spend the money encourages us so much to keep helping these children. You guys inspire us. And so just know that they're inspired when you go over there. It's not a waste of money to them. It means everything to them for us to go over and encourage them and say, hey, we believe in what you're doing. And then we got to hand out a bunch of necklaces. Becky bought some, and Ryan's wife, Becca, bought some necklaces. And we went to the oldest woman first and then to the youngest, and they got to pick out these necklaces. And they were so excited. That woman in the middle, can't see the necklace very well, to be honest, but she's showing it to you. She's saying, or to me when I was taking her picture, look at this necklace. And they're very excited. And one way of showing appreciation is they sing and they dance. So there's a video here, and this is them singing and saying thank you for the necklaces. Back. Yeah. It was such a joy to be a part of that. There were several of the women that went up and did that. And this is a cultural thing. They did that in their worship. They did it alongside the road. This is just what they do to show their appreciation. So if anybody feels like getting up and dancing, it'd be fun to watch you. I'm going to hand it over to Chrissy.
Thank you. So for me, it was a very emotional trip. I didn't know why when we left here. We had lots of prophetic spoken over us about being a team and don't miss what God has for you and all this stuff. So that was our thing. Why us? Why now? Why me? And so I had no idea what was about to happen. So in Clarence, when the prophetic word was spoken to Candace and then Payman went around the room, he said, Chrissy, God sees you as a mother. You have lots of kids, not just your blood kids, but you have lots of kids. And he wants you to know that you need to keep being a mother because he's going to keep bringing you kids. And I'm like, okay. And then after what had happened with Candace, I'm like, I know why I'm here. I'm here for Candace. Fantastic. Yeah, no, that's not at all why I was there. And so we get to Bompasana, and at night, everybody would sit around and play cards and stuff, and the One Life team and stuff would come down and eat with us and hang out. And I normally would be right in the middle of that, but I just wasn't feeling it at all. I'm like, I don't want to sit and play cards. I just wasn't into it. So one night, I was in the kitchen doing dishes, and this kid, Raphael, who used to work for One Life, he had introduced himself the first night we were there, but anyway, he comes in the kitchen, and he's just kind of hanging around and kicking around, and he's looking out the door. He's not really saying anything, but he's not really leaving. And I was like, what's going on? So I just started asking him questions while I was doing dishes. And he just sat down and poured his heart out. For 3 hours, I learned his part of his life story. He was raised in Port Elizabeth in a gang, was almost killed twice, told me about his scars. He had a really, really, really hard life. And God got a hold of him in Port Elizabeth and brought him to the Trans Sky, and he's doing great things for God. But him and I just connected, and he has such cultural stuff on his shoulders that he's trying to break, and he has nobody to look to for a role model to be a man, to be responsible, he's got all this. He's got 2 kids, he's 24, and he's got an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old. And he's just got a lot on his shoulders. And I'm, you know, our son, you know, we were parenting him from day one on how to be a man. I had 4 days to do 20 years of parenting. I'm like, all right, we're going right to the core here. And so him and I, and he took it. I told him about the word from Payman, and I said, I thought I knew why I was here, but now I know why I'm here, and he was part of it. And so him and I just connected, and I could talk to him like he was one of my kids, and he took it. Because culturally, you know, I'm kind of, my smart aleck attitude didn't, but he got it. He was fine. It was all right. And so him and I, we really connected. That's him on the bottom left. He took my place when we were at Port St. John. And so I told him I was going to take a picture of him upside down. He didn't like getting his picture taken, but too bad. And so we, like Candace said, we went to all the soup clubs and everything. Well, the last day that we were going to leave the trans guy and head to the ranch, we were, Noam Tu, who was the missionary wife on base, she asked if we wanted to do a home visit. And through a lot of circumstances and God intervening on everything, we ended up driving to this hut to just see the inside. And you can see it down there on the bottom right. The one on the right is the what they used to live in, and the one on the left is the new improved version. And there's 7 people that live in that left-hand side hut. But when we got there, we found this 11-year-old girl. She's holding this 7-month-old baby up there on the right. She has a 2-year-old around her leg. And then as you see the ones in the middle there, the little boy and the little girl are her little brother and sister. They had no food, no water, and they were there alone. And Becky and I were like, what? And the rest of the One Life team's like, you know, it's not a big deal. And Becky says, well, let's take them down to the center. They're eating down at the center. Let's take them down there. And the no, our Lambo says, they're watching the hut. Watching the hut do what? I mean, she's 11. I was just heartbroken. So we left, and we were supposed to go to the waterfalls, and we had packed a lunch and everything, and Becky and I were like, I can't. This is not happening. So the rest of the team got back, and we talked to everybody, and we're like, we have to go buy some food. We can't leave the trans guy like this. And so her and I just really connected. So we go back to town. We buy a bunch of food. We had made sandwiches for our picnic for the falls. We come back, and we go back in to take the food to them, and they're sitting in the corner like this. This is how we found them when we went back. They were outside when we went there the first time, but when we went back, and they're just sitting on a blanket, and she has them all, and she's not giving up that little girl for anything. So we haul in 2.5-gallon containers of water and enough Samp and Pop, which is a maize derivative. But anyway, enough for a month. You tell them what Pop is.
Pop is ground corn. That's their primary food there. So it's all carbs. And so a lot of these mamas you see are big gals. It's because that's all they eat. They don't have meat or that kind of stuff. Once in a while they get beans or squash and pumpkin, I guess, is kind of their entire diet. But Pop is what they basically live on. I don't want you to get with soda. They don't have soda much.
And so we had made sandwiches. So we took half our sandwiches and cut them in half. We didn't want to make them sick. We didn't know how long they'd been without food. From what we understood, the girl, the older girl, the 11-year-old girl, her name is Hope now, and I'll tell you why. But we thought that the mom had just left that morning. Her sister, that little baby, and the 2-year-old are her nieces, and her sister was in the hospital, which means you have AIDS, and for the most part. And so the mom had left to see if her sister was still alive, and that's why she was alone. And so we haul in all this food and everything, and we cut it in half, the sandwiches in half, and we give the little boy his sandwich, and he opens it up, and he sees meat, and he looks at his other sister sitting across from him like, look, there's meat. You know, he didn't say that, but you could just tell he was so shocked. And we bought him the ball and juice and stuff. They wouldn't put the juice down. They were so thirsty. So we get all the rest of the kids their stuff, and I hand Hope her stuff because she, you know, she's the mama there, and I hand her sandwich, and she just had a tear, and she just looked at me and said, thank you. It got me. Anyway, so I'll tell you why it's Hope. So we left there, and I was broken for 2 days. I couldn't even function. I was worthless to the team because I was pouting that I had to leave somebody there like that. So anyway, so I was praying for her. And I'm like, I know God knows who she is when I'm praying, but when I talk about her, I need a name. And so we were at the house in Alexandria getting ready to go to the orphanage, and I was just praying. I'm like, God, I need a name for her. So when I talk about her, everybody knows who I'm talking about. And he just said, her name is Hope. Okay. So I come walking out in the morning, and Tammy and Penny and Becky are there, and I'm like, I have an announcement. And they're like, what? And I'm like, and Tammy said, you know, sometimes I'll just, when that happens to me, and I said, give a name, her name's Hope. And Tammy's like, okay. And so that's where she got her name. Her name is ZZ Paw. Is that right, Emily? ZZ Paw is her name, her real name. I don't like that. I like Hope better. But anyway, so moving on, we were leaving. When we were leaving, I was starting to get sick. We got the tick bite fever, and I didn't know that's what it was. But we were in Johannesburg at a gift shop, and it was kind of dim in there, and I was pretty sick, and I was grumpy, and you know, I was ready to go home and had to say goodbye to Raphael twice, which was not fun. But anyway, we go into the gift shop, and there's this necklace display, and cultural stuff there is really got a lot of demonic twists to it, and so I just wanted to see if what they were, you know, what it was, if it was anything good. But I really couldn't see, and so I seen a little bluish green one that was pretty, and I picked it up, and it was the symbol of Hope. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm getting this one. So that's Hope, and I really, really want to go build Hope a new hut. So when we go back, and when I say we, I mean me and you and whoever else, I could hope we can build her a new hut, because I pray for her every day, and yeah, God's going to do great things through her. So anyways, Penny, it's up to you.
Hi, I'm Penny, and this was the first mission trip that I had ever been on before. And when it started off, I had heard the announcement in church that said, you know, we got to go be with women and children and help them in villages and stuff. And so that really struck me, my heart, to begin with. But then what happened is I had probably about four or five things that dramatic that happened to me over the last 6 months before I left. And they were pretty big changes, seasons in my life. And so I had basically made a pact with God that if I was going to go, the only thing that I was going to hand to anybody was a credit card, because I wanted to make sure that I was supposed to go. I just wasn't sure. And I got to meet Rufus, and then Becky and Owen came into my life. And between the three of them, Rufus is the one that ran the ranch over there, was instrumental in all of us going. And so it ended up that that's all I ended up doing, was handing a credit card, and they arranged everything for me. The unusual part about it was that I didn't show up for the trip until about halfway through it, because I couldn't go until then. So I ended up going alone. I had a great peace about it. I've never traveled like that ever before. And, of course, I'd never been to Africa or on a mission trip, so it was all brand new to me. And I remember asking Becky if I was too old to go, you know, because I am older. And she goes, no, that's fine. You can go. So anyway, so I just want to share a little. That's how it started off. And God met me in every one of those areas. I just had to show up for him. So when you look at this Jehovah Jireh Haven up here, this is an orphanage that's in Alexandria, which is in South Africa. And they've been established for about 25 years, and they take care of children that have AIDS and don't, you know, are homeless or don't have any parents, and they take care of some children that still do have families that get dropped off there. Molly and her husband Nels are the ones that run it, and this is the front entrance right there. When you pull up in your van, we actually parked right in front of there. The door is actually, you kind of can't see it, is a little driveway with a great big metal door. It's all fenced in all the way around. You know, it's nothing fancy, but it works. And all the kids have bunks inside, large tables, fairly large kitchen and everything. But most of the children, all we saw them eat were either sandwiches or the corn stuff, the pop that we talked about, and fruit and stuff was a big treat for them. I remember I went to the store one day and I made a mistake about having this little bag of leftover popcorn in my purse, and I'll tell you, I pulled it out and I almost got suffocated from all the kids trying to grab it. Next time I do that, I'll make sure I have enough for 100 children, so, or for 60 or however many. But everything was a big deal for them. So if you look to the top left, that is me. When I first got there, they allowed me to go into this. They have a little preschool there. They allowed me to go in and be able to do some teaching to the little tiny ones. To the top right, I was in the nursery a good part of the time. I was probably there, I think, 3 days before everybody else got there, which I was. That's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to be at the orphanage. Molly is to the left bottom. Told you a little bit about her. This is her heart's desire, and God has really met her and her husband in this. And to the right bottom, that is the, you know, all of the children sitting around doing the preschool. Okay, so the next slide. There's just two of them. Okay. So again, this is little Liam to the top left. He is one of the little boys. He has a sister that is there. And that's Asher and me. Asher is a teenage girl that's there. Molly actually adopts some of these children in the orphanage, and she's one of her older daughters. And she sings, and she's just a wonderful person. I was really, really blessed. Bottom left is Peter and a group of the kids. This was out on the playground. Peter is, I'm going to guess, about 16 years old. He came from another orphanage, hasn't really been there very long. He doesn't have a last name, probably because his mom and dad abandoned him. So they're in the process of trying to get him, establish a name. What that does to these children is they actually cannot go to school, public school. And so he had like a second grade level. He was going to the local Christian academy there because someone had initially sponsored him. And he went from, I think, second grade all the way up to sixth or seventh grade within a year. So he's doing really well. He's continuing to be in that Christian academy, and they're still working on his name. And there's a lot of other children that also have that same issue. So he was very special. He walked me to my hotel every day when I was there. So very special young man. And the other little young man was little Aaron. Aaron had a real hopelessness about him. There was only one time that I saw him smile. But, you know, if I didn't go for any other reason, I went for him. And it was really hard to leave him behind. None of these children are adoptable. It's not like you can just take them home with you. But you can go and be a part of their lives. And I encourage you to do that. Very important thing. It's all about relationships, and we were told that in the beginning, and I believe that that is really what it's about. One of the things that Asher said to me, the older teenage girl there, she said, "Penny, please don't forget me. Don't forget me." And the kids would always ask, some of you've mentioned, they'd always ask, "Do you remember my name?" And I'm horrible with names. So you'd walk in and they go, "What's my name? What's my name?" And I mean, you've got like 20, 30 children asking you their names, you know. I think they should all have name tags, but I could not remember many of their names. And I thought about how God writes our names on the palms of his hand. I think I might need to start doing that for people and their names. But, you know, I thought about that. I thought, why was it so important for us to remember their names? And what I thought was, it's because they don't want us to forget them. And so I think that's what we do going back, is letting them know that there's people in the United States that really love and care for them. Thank you.
I'm just going to stay sitting, and you can maybe go back a couple of slides there, the one that showed Molly in the corner, right there. For some of you have known, we've been here at the church for a long time, me and my wife Tammy. And in 1998, which is coming up, it's actually real within months of being 20 years ago, we were asked to come for presbytery, which is where hands are laid on you. Prophets come from out of town that usually don't know who you are or anything about you. And they lay hands on you and they prophesy what God has for you in your life and your future. And it's what we call God's reading your mail. And you haven't even opened it yet, and he's telling you what's going to come. Well, it was prophesied by Keith Hazel, who was, and two other prophets that came. And the word was, for me and Tammy, was that we would get a burden for small black children in Africa. And I would go and bring back to the American Christian businessman a prototype of an orphanage, and sell it to the American businessman how these orphanages could be more than one or more than one building, and it was duplicatable. And because it was duplicatable and the same prototype, that it was so cost effective. Now, when that was prophesied over us, we still had kids at home. The last thing we even could think of is that we would have a burden for small black children. But absolutely knew it was God's word. Within about 6 months of that, we found ourselves out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on a business cruise. And a gentleman that, if you've ever heard the Bible on in audio, that gentleman's name was Stephen B. Stevens, and they called him the voice of God, and he was a Christian friend and brother of ours from Cincinnati. And we ended up on this business cruise, and we'd went ashore for the day, and we came back onto the cruise ship, and it was the captain's banquet that night. You're supposed to dress up in your tuxes and get all ready. And Tammy says, "I don't even want to go." She says, "I'm tired. I'm sunburnt. Let's just order room service." And I said, "No, we need to go. We've got people that are going to be there. They're expecting us." Walked in, and as we get to the door, Stephen B. Stevens comes up and grabs me by the arm. And he says, "Oh, good, you're here." And I said, "Yeah, my wife doesn't want us to be here." And he says, "No, God wants you here. God's got somebody he wants you to meet." How often does somebody come up and say, "God's got somebody he wants you to meet"? I said, "Oh, really?" So he takes us across the room through all the people, and he introduces us, and he says to this other couple, he said, "Chuck and Tammy Gates, meet Ron and Joanna Kusmal. Ron and Joanna, meet Chuck and Tammy Gates." And so I said, "Hi, Ron," and I shake his hand. And as I shake his hand, he turns my hand over. And I travel all over, and most of you people in this room know what this is. It's an elk tooth. But other people don't know what that is. And they just think it's a pretty ring, and they always comment on it. Well, he said, "You're a hunter." And I said, "Yeah, I love to hunt." He said, "You need to come hunt where I live." I said, "Oh, really? Where's that?" He said, "South Africa." I said, "Oh, okay. So what are you doing? You live in South Africa?" He said, "Well, part-time. We've started 13 churches over there, and we also live in Idaho." He says, "But we have X amount of acres," and he said, "You need to come hunt where I hunt." And I said, "So what all do you do?" And he says, "Well, what we're doing right now is we're working on a prototype of an orphanage that we feel can be built and duplicated over and over again and cost efficient, and we're going to, and the prototype is to build it in the shape of a cross so over planes overhead can see that it's a safe haven and shelter." You could have knocked us off the boat at that point. So we came back to the church. We started thinking that this is the sign. This is what we're supposed to do. We started conversing with Ron, putting together a home group, and planning on taking a mission trip to go see what his orphanages were. And we worked hard at it, and we tried, and it just never came together. And I felt burdened with that word. And as time went on, all of a sudden we decided, well, let's just take an African safari and we'll go and see. We know God prayed that. Maybe that wasn't who we were supposed to line up with. Maybe we're supposed to go with just go on our own. And if God's in it, he'll direct our path. We tried to do that. It never came together. We couldn't go. We actually booked things to plan on going, and the time frame fell through. The next thing you know, Owen comes and Becky come to Arizona this winter. And all of the time I'm feeling I've never been released from this word. And for some of you, it's called a fear of the Lord, a good fear, knowing that I've never been released from this. I'd talked to even so many people, but just knowing. And I'd booked, Jay Shirley was the MC for the Rocky Mountain Elk Banquet 2 years ago. And up comes for bid is a South African safari with Hunza, who's Rufus, is who Penny was talking about. And I look at Tammy, and Tammy looks at me, and she says, I think you need to bid on it. And I said, I do too. I think that we're still supposed to go. So we bid on it, and we got the bid. And our business has kept us so busy that whole year. It said right on it, 1 year, non-refundable, non-transferable, used, has to be used in 1 year. And we tried to go. We couldn't get it together. Next thing, it's already lapsed, and these guys come to Arizona, and they tell us that they're going to South Africa. And I said, you know, I had this hunt, but I missed out on it with Rufus. I really wanted to go over there. And he said, well, let me see what I can do. He calls back at 4 o'clock. They were already in New Mexico. And he calls me back on the phone and says, hey, I talked to Rufus, and he'll approve that hunt. And so why don't you guys join us? So next thing we found out, our passports were going to expire. We had to expedite the passports, and they were going to make it the day before we were supposed to left if we were lucky. Could be a week late. God expedited the passports. They got there 4 days earlier than what the passport office said they even could get there. God expedited it. We head out to leave. Oh, forgot about another thing. Sorry, I'll be quick. So about a year after that, we end up on another business trip, and we're in Hong Kong. And me and my wife and this other pastor friend of mine and his wife are in Hong Kong. And we go out on the Hong Kong harbor early evening, and the sun's just going down. And there's two artists out there sketching women, sketching pictures. And me and my buddy Ed said, go ahead and get your pictures done, girls, and we'll watch these artists do it. And me and my buddy are walking around while they get their pictures done. And the next thing you know, there's 5 or 6 black guys standing over here on the harbor, and they walk right across, all the way across, you know, like 70 yards straight for us. And they come over, and the one black guy comes over to me, and he taps me on the shoulder. He said, you are not from here, are you? And I said, no, and you guys aren't apparently either, because, you know. And he said, no, we are from South Africa. We are missionaries. We are taking the gospel into China. He said, God told me to come talk to you. Okay. I said, well, God probably told you to talk to him because he's a pastor. He was raised in the missionary field. And he said, no, God told me to talk to you. You are supposed to take the gospel into my country. This trip, Tammy will tell you, but we were late. Because that plane got delayed by 10 minutes catching up to make our connection to go to Johannesburg. We spent 4 days in Atlanta. She was sick at the time. God maybe didn't want us there when she was sick. I don't know, but I don't think he wanted confusion that we were supposed to go to the trans sky and see the other. But we were brought there, and Molly's had prophecy spoke over her that she was supposed to open this orphanage. I found out that there was people that God put on their burden on their heart years ago in Kansas City that seen a prototype of an orphanage. Molly has vision for 8 more buildings to house children. And I don't know if this is it. We're just looking for confirmation, but I know God brought us there for a reason. And so it's just, and I can tell you, without a doubt, God drove us and held us off to be there when we went there. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Tam.
So we arrived at the ranch, like Chuck said. We didn't get to go to the Trans Sky. We didn't get to go to Bambisana. We didn't get to do the soup kitchens. And I was a little bummed, but now I know that, you know, there's the scripture that Brian Acey, our former senior leader here, texted me when he found out we were stuck in Atlanta that said, but I, Paul, tried to come to you again and again. And so that's kind of how we were feeling. And so we get to the ranch, and the very next morning, Chrissy and Penny and Becky and I were driving a couple of hours away in the van alone to stay 3 days in this other town. And so I was really nervous about all of us going alone and doing that. But God just covered us. We never felt in danger ever the whole time we were there. And we went to the orphanage. If you want to advance that slide once. One thing that has really encouraged me since I've been home is that the connections I make here at home, I made there, and nothing changed. I was, from all these prophetic words and what we knew about the orphanage, I was expecting, you know, to be holding babies and changing diapers and things like that. But here I have a heart for millennial age girls and single moms, and that's who God gathered around me there too. And so I've been really encouraged since I've been home about that. I ended up, that the first picture there is Shekinah Glory and Asher Zion. I love how Molly has named them their names. You know, there's kids there named Blessing and Freedom, and because she gives them names. And we ended up in a conversation one day about purity before marriage. And I don't even know how that conversation got started with these girls, but it did. And so I told them how Chuck had given our daughter Cody a promise ring when she was in her last days of high school, that she would stay pure before God until she was married. And so I went back to the ranch after the 3 days, and I wanted to give these kids promise rings. But there's nowhere to shop, no jewelry stores, no Kmarts, no. I looked through the grocery store thinking, how could I make something for these kids? I went through my suitcase looking for some thing I could fashion together to be a ring for a promise ring, and there was nothing. And so I was telling everyone this story as we were kind of unwinding one night back at the ranch. And before we went back on Monday and took the guys back, these guys had donated personal rings of theirs to me. And you know, I had Ryan's former wedding ring, not from his former wife, but. And I had all the rings I got were treasures. You just don't go to Africa with costume jewelry. And I got to go back to the orphanage on Monday and give these girls promise rings. That's a picture of my hand and a couple of the girls there. I unloaded my suitcase. Asher in the last picture is wearing a pair of sunglasses I found in my suitcase and gave to her. And she's sporting her ring there. You can see it. When we gave Ryan's wedding ring to one of the gals there who's a single mom, her name is Choppy. And the girls told me as I was leaving that their slang there for the promise ring was no ringy, no dingy. So that might be politically incorrect, but that's what they called it. They got it. They got they got the point. So anyway, that's it.
Very good. Hey, give these guys a hand, would you? You guys, thanks for supporting this team in going, and you've seen how it's impacted their lives. God is at work all over the planet. When Jesus left, he said, go and make disciples of all nations. And we are blessed. We have the resources, we have the education, and the ability far beyond most people on the planet to go and make a difference in other people's lives. And God has continued to open doors for us to do that on a global level. So we appreciate him doing that, but consider yourself invited to go and make a difference as we have doors that open up opportunity for us.
For more information, visit our website at www.mounthelena.cc. Download our mobile app, available in iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook.